From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of January 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Congress has weighed in on the availability of Roundup Ready alfalfa. USDA says it is making headway on the removal of a beef export ban to China. And a new government-approved bio-based label for consumers is in the works. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And then later on in the program, we'll review last week's USDA reports and take a look at what it all might mean to the price of commodities with ag economist Daryl Good. And as we close out our half-hour program, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Taking a look at the way the numbers settled up in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures from the soft red winter wheat pit finished the March contract at 803.5, up 6.25 today. The May futures at 832 were up 6, July at 853.25, up 4, and the hard red finished 8.75 higher in Kansas City at $8.97 for the May. The corn pit now, March contract, 654, up 12.75. The May at 664, up 12.75. And July corn at 668, up 12.5 cents. September at 616.25, 11 higher. In December futures at 576. In the corn pit, a gain today of 7.75 cents a bushel. March soybeans, $14.14, up 2.75. May at 14.24.5. 2.5 higher. July at 14.30 1/4, up 2.25. August at 14.04 3/4, up 3.25. And November beans for next year at $13.41 3/4, up 5.75. March bean meal at $3.85.30, up $2. March bean oil at $57.26, down 43 cents. February live cattle 108.65, 15 cents lower on the day. January feeders at 126.30, down 70. And the lean hogs finished the February contract at $80.27.5 for a gain of 27.5 cents on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. February crude oil, $88.86 a barrel, down $2. Ethanol at $2.32 3/10 cents, a tenth of a cent higher, rather a penny higher for the day. Natural gas at $4.68 6/10, up 12.5 cents. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.61 9/10 cents, down 3 6/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,346.50, settled $23.70 lower. And the Dow at 11,833 is just about 8 points higher at this hour. The U.S. dollar at 78.8 is up 0.16 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 331.90, down 1.53. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. In Urbana-Champaign, a 40% chance of snow for the day. Mostly cloudy, a high near 23 degrees. Wind chill values between 5 and 10. West-northwest winds between 11 and 13 miles an hour, though gust as high as 18 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of just 0 degrees. Wind chill values between 2 and 12 below. West-northwest winds at 9 to 16, though gust as high as 24. On Friday, should be partly sunny. The high, just 11 degrees in Urbana-Champaign. Wind chills between negative 2 and negative 12. Northwest winds between 5 and 8, though gust as high as 16. And Friday night, a 30% chance of snow, mostly cloudy, a low of 10 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 4 and 1 degree. And Saturday, a 30% chance of snow, mostly cloudy, a high near 23. Southeast winds at 7 to 11 miles an hour. Winds will gust as high as 16. By the time we get to Saturday night, a low of 10 degrees, mostly cloudy. Sunday, it'll be partly sunny, with a high near 22 degrees. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we talk to Pete Levitt at the bottom of this half hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us from ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It's been a long time since you and I have had a chance to have a discussion on the air. I've been on the road a lot. I suppose you have, too. And we had the holidays in the midst. So why don't you tell me what you've seen over the last several weeks?
Well, the market continues in its uptrend. Every once in a while, the market gets a little scare, a little corrective move, but for the most part, within a day or two, the negative price action is pretty well erased, and the market continues to exert upward momentum. Main function here, basically in the corn market, is to ration inventories. Before the market runs out of inventories, it's doing that in advance, because if you do look at balance sheets and you look at current usage rates, you could probably project out that unless something happens, somebody's not going to have any corn toward the end of the marketing year. So the market is going to have to do that ahead of time, and that's basically where we're at in the marketplace. Soybeans, again, reflecting a very strong demand situation. We've had weather problems in Argentina. The South American crop is not put to bed yet. So there could still be some twists and turns in the South American crop. Even if weather is favorable from this point forward, that total South American crop is less than last year, and you have an environment of a growing economy, both here in the United States and across the world.
Which is more likely the most positive of the commodities in Chicago? We generally watch corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Well, I think the main focus, of course, is corn, and you can kind of see that today being up 12 cents. Wheat's up 6, and beans are only up 2 to 3. So the main focus still remains the corn market, pretty much still finding support from the January crop report, where USDA did have to bring down the production levels. And tighten of the balance sheet. I think most people look at that balance sheet and feel that USDA is probably too high on carryover, that is probably less than that, at least given the current rate of usage.
If you look forward, do you see a point at which producers need to be careful about the new crop corn and being too bullish that, or is the carryout just so small that the bullishness from the lack of crop on this corn crop will carry through into next year?
Well, those are all good questions, and I don't have a real good answer other than producers need to do what is best for their particular situation, and I know you can drive a semi-truck through that. But I also know that marketing grain, just because you have a profit, isn't necessarily all what it's touted to be, because if you basically did that all your life, yes, you never went broke, but number two, you never grew. If you're going to grow in any kind of business, I don't care if it's a farm operation or a small business or a commodity trader, you have to take risk every once in a while. You can't be too quick to take your money and leave the table. And basically, I see some of that happening. That's happened basically quite a bit here over the past 2 to 3 years. You've got people out there advising farmers to take their money and go home. Actually, I think they've almost turned into, instead of risk managers, they've turned into risk creators because they've left the table too soon. And now the farmers are in situations where they've sold crop way under what new cost of production is going to be, and even a year in advance, way ahead of things. So I'm telling producers, basically, you kind of got to take it one week at a time. You got to evaluate your own situation. And while it may not work, you know, last year was all counter-seasonal. People fought it when the market went down. People fought it when it went back up. And the statistics say the market's going to be more average than non-average. And so I'm kind of using seasonal studies to kind of keep me anchored to the market from not trying to sell it too quick. Let the market work an average seasonal pattern. As soon as it maybe begins to move out of a seasonal pattern, then maybe you need to take some defensive type moves. Now, using that strategy, yes, you're not going to sell the high because it's going to take time for the market to kind of tell you for sure that we have drifted out of that. But I think selling it, you know, the people that decided to sell at $4 or $2.50 out of the market already, that same way with December 11 corn, there was a lot of corn sold for $4.25, $4.50. They're already $1.50 out of the market. So, you know, I'd rather miss the high by 20 or 30 cents than sell it $3 or so before the high. So that's kind of been my approach, Todd.
Seasonally, does that give you, what, until March and then another chance in May, maybe?
Well, seasonally, I mean, statistically, half your highs in a market are made basically June, July. Very few highs are made in January. They do occur, but only about a third of your highs probably are made during the first 4 months out of the year. Like I said, about half your highs are made during June and July. There's a few May highs, and then you've got about one chance in four of making a high after July 31st, and that's basically we had that last year. So our one out of 4 years kind of occurred last year. So I guess I'm kind of going to play the seasonal odds that we're probably something more in tune with the seasonal. I do think one has to be careful in a sense is that maybe once we get to March, once we get to April, things are more vulnerable turning down than maybe they are because of everybody so extremely bullish here. And the function of the market is to, like I said, ration inventories before we run out sometime in the summer. The function of the market is to shore up a good planning increased numbers, and then we'll see what April and May weather bring, whether or not we get an early planting, delayed planting, or whatever that is. The corn market needs a very early planting, something very similar to last year, an early harvest to get new inventories into the pipeline. Anything less than that, the market's there's going to be some fingernail biting, I think, as I look at the 2011 growing season.
So you're a tight holder of corn and soybeans, wheat too?
Yes. I think at some point in time, the wheat and soybean market's going to struggle for acres. But the first thing is to shore up the corn acres. The second thing then is then once you shore up the corn acres, then bean acres come in on the light side. So then the function of the bean market then at some point in time will probably be to encourage people to tear up wheat acres, especially in the areas that are not do not have a good stand. So soybeans are going to try to steal some acres from wheat, and then when you start stealing some acres from wheat, then all of a sudden the balance sheet of wheat begins to tighten up. So then wheat will have to react to maybe some acreage destruction. So, you know, it just kind of looks to me that the overall world supplies of food are tight enough and you're in an improving economy. And I think, you know, the market is not going to become comfortable until we get further down the road, at least the start of the 2011 growing season, and we kind of get off to a good start. The thing, too, you have to keep in mind, you know, the grain stocks told you that old crop inventories are out of farmers' hands. That means all of the hedge pressure related to farmer movement is already into the marketplace. So basically now as end users begin to use those inventories that farmers have parted with, you basically then get hedge lifting. So you have upward momentum in the marketplace. So new selling from producers is probably a non-existent factor at this point. The only thing you have to worry about probably is fund liquidation at some point in time. And right now there's talk that you could probably bring in another $200 billion worth of money into commodities worldwide. So, you just kind of let the trend be your friend at this point, I think, Todd.
Dan, thank you so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. The Illinois Production Cost Report was released this morning. I'll try to give you these numbers every 2 weeks. They updated the cost of anhydrous ammonia, now at $780.06 a ton across the state, up $2.09 from 2 weeks ago. Urea at $46.00, $491.30. That's up 41 cents. 28% at $3.38, up $2.06. The DAP at $669.81 on average, $1.72 higher from 2 weeks ago. MAP at $707.50, up $6.50. Potash at $566.61, up 89 cents. And the average cost for diesel fuel, less than 1,000 gallons, just 2 cents higher at $3.03 a gallon. Dave Dickey's here now. He'll help us take a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, three key Republicans on the House and Senate Agriculture Committees wrote Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, criticizing his proposal that would deregulate Roundup Ready alfalfa with setbacks and geographic restrictions. Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas co-signed a letter with Senate Agriculture Committee members Saxby Chambliss and Pat Roberts, which questions how Vilsack could consider any regulatory framework for biotech crops not based solely on science. Chambliss has been serving as ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, but Roberts is expected to take over that role. The lawmakers added that USDA's proposal for geographic restrictions and setbacks were the first time USDA has proposed such measures in a regulatory decision where the crop did not pose a plant, pest, or health risk. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says the U.S. has made headway in convincing China to remove a 7-year ban on U.S. beef. Progress was made on several issues, such as what kind of non-muscle beef cuts, like livers, tongues, and intestines, China will accept from U.S. exporters. China banned U.S. beef in late 2003 after the first case of mad cow disease was discovered in the U.S. USDA officials say a new bio-preferred label will allow consumers to find and help promote the sale of bio-based products. Under a rule to be published today in the Federal Register, products made of wholly or significantly biological ingredients, renewable plant, animal, marine, or forestry materials will be eligible for a USDA-certified bio-based label. Products need to be only 25% bio-based to warrant the label. China's National Bureau of Statistics says that China's annual gross domestic product growth sped up in the fourth quarter to 9.8% from 9.6% in the third quarter. Full-year growth picked up to 10.3% from 9.2% in 2009. Domestic investment and consumption contributed 9.5 percentage points to its growth last year, while net exports added just 0.8 of a percent. Consumer prices in December rose 4.6% from a year earlier, slowing from a 28-month high of 5.1% in November. Walmart is expected to announce that it will reformulate thousands of products to make them healthier and push its suppliers to do the same. The company plans to reduce sodium and sugars in some items, build stores in poor areas that don't already have grocery stores, reduce prices on produce, and develop a logo for healthier items. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, and he puts together our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. The 21st edition is scheduled for the 8th day of March. That's a Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. One of the best marketing meetings you can attend all year long. Tickets still available. They're $20 each, but you'll need to get in soon by calling this number, 800-528-7980. Again, they're $20. The day is March the 8th. It's a Tuesday. It's our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. Call now at 800-528-7980 to reserve your seat. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Darrell Good joins us now to talk about the landscape for pricing corn and soybeans after the USDA report of January the 12th.
Well, on old crop, I think my philosophy all along has been you kind of periodically make sales when prices strengthen, and we've certainly seen one of those episodes right now. So I think this is an opportunity for those that still haven't sold all the crop or really high percentage of it. This is an opportunity to add to those sales. I still think we want to hold some of the crop into the spring planting period. We need to see the acreage numbers at the end of March, and we need to see what kind of start we're going to get to the spring and early summer weather scenario. So yes, I think make some more sales at these levels, but I'm not sure I want to be completely sold out on even on old crop at this point, given the bigger picture of strong demand and production uncertainty. On new crop, we've kind of talked all along, $5 harvest bid, you might want to think about some sales. But again, I wouldn't get real aggressive even now on new crop. It looks like we can hold these prices through the insurance pricing period of February, which is going to give us an awfully good floor on revenue for those who choose to take those products. And so the downside risk is managed a little bit if you're planning on taking insurance and these prices do hold up. So I would kind of be modest sales on new crop, 20% or so, but not get real crazy at this point until we get further into the towards planting period.
Thank you much, Darrell.
My pleasure.
That was University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good. We made our recording Friday of last week. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt will be here.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980. It's National Butter Crunch Day, and it's also St. Sebastian Day, patron of gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1910, Joy Adamson was born. A naturalist and conservationist, she documented in Kenya local uses of plant parts for insecticides, dyes, fibers, and foods. In 1964, the world's largest cheese was made, a 34,000-pound cheddar. It was created by the Wisconsin Cheese Foundation for the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair. It took 170,000 quarts of milk from 16,000 cows. it was eaten at the 1965 annual meeting of the Wisconsin Dairymen and Cheesemakers Association. And in 1998, American researchers at the University of Massachusetts announced that they had cloned calves that could be used in the production of medicinal milk. The goal was to mass produce milk containing human proteins important for treating human diseases by splicing human genes into cattle DNA. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today. Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, a couple of things. It's third Thursday of the month. Let's start there, and then you can move into the cold weather that we're going to get here very shortly.
Okay, this is the day when the National Weather Service issues its 30-day and 90-day forecast, and without any delay, here it is. We've got colder than normal temperatures forecast across the entire northern tier of states from the Pacific Northwest through the Dakotas into the upper Midwest and then southeastward to cover most of the central and eastern Midwest. So below normal temperatures in prospect for February. Above normal temperatures are scheduled from Arizona on eastward across the southern states, New Mexico, Texas, and into the lower Mississippi Valley. And elsewhere, temperatures about normal. As far as precipitation is concerned, above normal precipitation, very similar to where the cold air is, from the Pacific Northwest, eastward across the northern tier of states, into the Midwest, and then above normal in the eastern half of the Corn Belt states, down into the northern Delta region, and up into the lower Great Lakes. And then dry conditions for Florida, dry conditions for the Southwest. That's the 30-day forecast. The 90-day forecast looks very similar, with cold temperatures across the north, warm in the southwest and the south-central states, and about normal elsewhere.
I suppose for us that tells us we'll have snow on the ground and then we'll have a big Arctic blast of some sort, right?
That indeed is what I think this pattern is looking for. When it's both cold and wet, that's a snowy pattern for us.
Well, we've got a little snow on the ground and the cold's coming.
Well, here it comes, and it's going to be in there before the day is out. A sharp Arctic cold front coming southeastward through the upper Midwest and will come clean across Illinois late this afternoon and this evening and be with us tonight. And we're going to see some of the coldest temperatures of the season so far tonight. We look for low temperatures, even with the wind blowing, getting down below zero, running anywhere from about 3 degrees to almost 10 degrees below zero in the northern third of the state, and near zero to the low single numbers in the southern part of the state. Very cold night, and as I say, this is with a wind. It's not a radiationally cooling night where it gets clear and cold under calm conditions. So very cold. Tomorrow's temperatures won't get out of the single numbers through much of the state, and then we'll see a slow rise in temperatures to only 10 degrees below normal. The temperatures today and tomorrow actually will average about 25 degrees below normal for the date tomorrow. Then they'll come up to a balmy 10 below normal for the date over the weekend. We are going to see a little bit milder temperatures maybe at the end of the week. As far as precipitation is concerned, just a few light snow showers, mostly the southern portion of the state tonight, then some lakes effect type of snow in the north tomorrow. Amounts mostly less than an inch or so. We get another little dusting maybe about Monday, which may be worth a few more inches there. But cold, 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 that's the outlook for the next several days.
Can I have you stay with me for the podcast, too, for just a moment?
Sure thing.
I'll be back with you in a moment. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Tune in for the podcast for more. Hey, thanks for staying with us, Pete. Please do take a look at South America. If you could start with the southern part of Brazil, please.
The southern states of southern Brazil haven't had it too badly at all. They've been in an area that's got some rain, mostly adequate and good for crop development and growth, but they haven't had the very heavy rains that have occurred just further north from the central portions across Minas and Paraná and those states. In Rio Grande do Sul, things look pretty good for the crops. Then you go a little bit farther south, we get to the Argentine, and here it's just been predominantly dry. They get some showers. It hasn't been as bone dry as it was earlier this season, but it's still too dry for crop development down in there, for best development in the northeastern portion of the state, which is basically a corn and soybean portion of the Argentine, mostly corn crops in this region. Further south in the wheat country, it's been dry, but they can handle that better, and we're not looking at a wheat crop at this time of year as we're into the summer crop productions. So I'd say we're going to look for some decline in production in the Argentine, certainly on their corn bean crops. In Brazil, it's going to be a quality problem in main soybean areas of the north portion of the southern states. In the southern portions, I think we're looking at a pretty good crop if we can get this rain to end. And we're not seeing that yet, but it looks like this coming week won't be as bad as what we've just seen the past few weeks.
Thank you so much for spending the extra time.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon.